This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Yes, indeed. Welcome to the Geekscape Book Club. Today, discussing Black Adam, The Dark Age. And it was indeed a dark age on the heels of the New 52, which we will talk more about with our panel. And it's like, I can't show it with the cover without it reflecting the screen in front of me. But yeah, if you buy this collection currently, you will see it has a picture of The Rock on it. And he did indeed portray Black Adam in the film version. We'll touch on that a little bit. As always, I am Christian Butt. As is so often the case, joining me is the one, the only, Eric Adam Connor.
My actual middle name. I'm not
is
trying
Adam.
To.
Yeah.
It is Adam.
Oddly enough,
Jewish
Jeff.
Adam. Yes.
Jeff Winstead's middle name is Teth. So you see, it all works out.
Yeah.
And of course, our third head of this Hydra discussing this is indeed Jeff Winstead, the creator of The Alternate, and also, let's say, a book with no glare on it, which I appreciate. Last Battle of the Revolution, available in. On Amazon.
You got to go with a matte finish.
Yeah, no, you always have to go with a matte finish. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. I agree with you 100%.
Glossies for suckers.
Glossy is for suckers. So, Jeff Winstead, I think it's important background to mention you have not seen Black Adam the film, correct?
I have not.
Yes, but you are here to provide background for Black Adam, the comic book character. Now, interestingly, this was a story you hadn't read, right? Because it was post New 52 or what was the reason you hadn't read this? You're very familiar with the character, but you hadn't read this story.
Yeah. When you told me this is what we were reading, I said, oh, if it's anything from before New 52, the odds are like 90% that I've read it. And sure enough, I had not. And I figured out why. And that's because it was written by Peter Tomasi. Oh. And at the time, Peter Tomasi was an editor at DC. Okay. And I had a real aversion to editors who then become writers. It felt very cronyism. And I just refused to read it just for that reason. Now, oddly enough, 2 years after this, he writes a Batman storyline that I did read, loved it. And then he went on to write Superman, loved it. So I'm a huge fan of his now. But at the time, I just had a total aversion. So this is one of the few things that DC was putting out in 2007 that I hadn't read.
What do you think about writers who go on to become editor-in-chief, specifically Tom DeFalco, who I know wrote an era of The Amazing Spider-Man that was very near and dear to both of our hearts.
That's right. Yeah.
So he went the other way, you know?
Yeah. Well, there was in the 60s, 70s, 80s, this was much more common, the back and forth. Denny O'Neill, Jim Shooter, Dick Giordano.
By the way, Louise Simonson and Nascenti, two of Chris Claremont's editors, are both phenomenal writers.
Right. Yeah. So this time where this in the past, I was either more accepting of it or it seemed more like writers with skills who then became editors and then would sometimes go back to writing.
Right.
And I'd sort of gotten burned a couple of times in the 90s, 2000s with going the other way, which, some name you would see who was only an editor and all of a sudden he's writing for the same company often the same characters he was editing, and it didn't work out. And this, I thought this was going to be the same way, but turns out I'm a complete devotee of Tomasi's now. He's a great writer, fantastic writer.
Okay, so heading into this Dark Age storyline, what do you think is the most useful thing that perhaps we could have known heading into this that I didn't really, apart from the movie, I really didn't know anything about this character? And I know you haven't seen the movie, but what do you think if there's a couple of things that you should know about Black Adam before you crack open the Dark Age, what should you know about him?
Yeah, about 75 issues worth of Justice Society history. And okay. I don't want to get into a big thing off the bat, but this is my problem with this, is this does not stand as a quintessential Black Adam story because there's so much pre-continuity and continuity that happens that had just happened. This is a follow-up to. So this is the problem with sequential comics and with the era of everything gets collected as a trade. So not everything is Dark Knight Returns, Watchmen. It's not because of the quality level here. It's because this was something intended to be serialized. And it just, it reads like a way station of a longer story.
And yeah, let me just interject. Sure. I feel like when we got to the end, you know, it was almost to a point where I was like, okay, yeah, this is a nice little collection. And then the way it ends, you're like, oh, okay. So this was like, come back for issue 7. You know?
Essentially,
and,
Yeah, almost to the point where it invalidated the entire miniseries. I don't want to get to the ending just yet. But so, okay, that's what we're going
to
do.
I don't want to jump to the ending yet.
So
how we roll in Geekscape Book Club. We start with the end, spoil other stories, then get to the beginning.
Exactly. Every conversation we have is like the film Memento.
Yeah. So just in a broad sense, I would say it for what we do here, I think it failed at the level of being the Black Adam story. Now that begs the question, what is the Black Adam story? Well, there kind of sort of isn't one. This is the first book that ever had Black Adam on the title. And I think until this year, this is the only, like they've done a few specials, like maybe a single issue here and there. They just did a new 6-issue miniseries, but that's it. So you're basically talking about, you know, Shazam stories where he's a background character, or Justice Society, which he was in just before this came out. So...
Right, yeah, and the Justice Society, an iteration of it, do appear in the film. So, and as I've told you in the past, that Dr. Fate's depiction, I think, is the thing that, regardless of what you think about the rest of the movie, I think you'll be like, oh, this is great.
Yeah,
my pal Will Sterling said that he never thought he would get to see him on screen represented well, and he was wrong. Pierce Brosnan, that was all great. So that's good to know that while this isn't like the definitive, this isn't the book, it's the one to apparently put The Rock's face on, but then also there isn't like, oh, here's the obvious one you should have chosen. Eric, I want to get your thoughts, heading into this with your familiarity, I think similar to mine, at least largely being from the film. Is that correct?
Yeah, actually it is. It's funny when you're talking about your knowledge of the character, I'm like, oh, wow, wait, usually you have like, a much deeper sort of knowledge of the roots of the character and comics featuring them.
No, but that's when we pick Marvel characters.
That's true. Yeah,
we do right. Marvel books, I'm usually,
that's why
I'm usually well-versed.
For the radio audience, my den looks like a place where like a very lonely 12-year-old boy would live. Who stole his dad's CD collection. So I couldn't even find, I thought I had Adam Smasher. So instead I'm just holding up a giant man pop figure I got from a Comic-Con many years ago.
And yet, by the way, and yet your giant man, and I know this is lost in our audio audience, looks like Budman, who of course Duffman is based on. But anyway, back to your point. Yes.
But I also still have an old school Steppenwolf just to keep it real.
That's great.
So, you know, it's funny you bring up Jeff, like, the idea of like having to read a lot of Justice Society to really get yourself ready, because that was the thing for the first, I guess, half issue. Yeah. I found myself like definitely at a disadvantage coming into this fresh. And what I really love about this book club, Christian, is the idea of like titles I haven't read, you know, and I kind of like coming in a bit blind. Like I didn't do a lot of Black Adam research beforehand. I did see the film, but it did take a little while to kind of get into the drama of it, I found, because it it name checks so many things. And this was not part of that first wave of New 52, was it?
No. This is 2007. So this is four years at least before New 52.
Is this the point where they realized that New 52 didn't go the way they want? Because my general assumption is people weren't happy with New 52.
That's correct. Yeah,
it was like Marvel doing Heroes Reborn,
or the New Coke of DC.
Exactly.
I disagree on New Coke, but this isn't the time for that.
I say while drinking my Diet Coke.
2016 is when they tried to course correct on New 52. So they spent about 5 years trying to make it work, and it just didn't. But this predates New 52 by 4 years.
Yeah.
And by this point, there were a couple of things at DC that I felt were going sideways. The Identity Crisis miniseries, which set up a lot of weird stuff with a character getting murdered that they allude to here, Elongated Man, Ralph Dibny's wife, Sue. So there's a holdover from that storyline here. They had just done a weekly series called 52, which you got 52 weeks in a year, one issue a week. It was an interesting experiment, and Black Adam was one of the stars of that series. And that's where everything that happens before this happened was in the book 52 and in Justice Society. So the introduction of his wife, the Isis character, who, yes, is based on the character from the 70s live action Saturday morning television show. Osiris, they mentioned a couple times her brother, sort of become a Black Adam version of the Marvel family. So the way Captain Marvel has Freddie and Mary Marvel, Black Adam had his own supporting cast of superpowered, a spouse and in-law, I guess.
So the key is, I guess, that he's unable to turn into Black Adam because the word Shazam was changed, which is something that I only understand because I read all six issues, and it was like mid issue six that they explained this to us. Is that correct? Is that a fair? Is that me summarizing it?
That's correct. And to be really simple, as simple as I can be, you'll see there's a scene maybe in the first or second issue with Captain Marvel, but it's actually Freddie, Captain Marvel Jr., but he's wearing the red outfit but no cape.
Right.
Because Captain Marvel is now Shazam the Wizard. So Billy Batson in this time period for DC has taken over the Wizard's role had the power to change the word on Teth Adam. So that's what's happened.
And then he changed it to chocolate egg cream, which, by the way, much better. Anyway, I'm sorry. What were you going to say, Eric?
No, I was about to say, I wasn't sure if we were going to spoil that, but
I think it's okay.
As a New Yorker above me and a watered down New Yorker who grew up in Delaware, I know when I saw chocolate egg cream and it was a whole page just dedicated to what goes into a chocolate egg cream.
Yeah.
I did feel like I had reached my happy place.
Yeah, that was a great set.
I couldn't get that. It was great. And the payoff of it, right? And he's like, he basically says like that child, like that was the name. That was a really fun payoff, actually.
It was.
And this thing didn't have that much comedy. Occasional pop culture reference, but
not as much as we usually get. Yeah.
Black Adam, the movie, had a bit more comedy than this book. But I don't know. Once I got past that first part where I was definitely confused, I also got into the story, though. Yeah. I, at some point, it was compared to like Shakespeare. Like the first few minutes of watching a Shakespearean play, you're always like, wait, what? And then you sort of like, I don't know, let it wash over you. The way like Christian Blatt's voice washes over his crowd.
I mean, it is like watching a BBC production of Shakespeare to indeed watch or listen to this show. You're like, Derek Jacobi the biggest overactor that I've ever seen, or is he actually a genius? I have to keep watching because I can't tell. Before we dive back in, Eric provided me with these images. Thank you very much. We're talking, of course, about Isis and Wonder Woman, the one true Wonder Woman, Linda Carter. I'm not here to badmouth Gal Gadot for any on-screen depiction, except, of course, for Wonder Woman 84. But then side by side, we have Wonder Woman and Isis ISIS. So much factoring into this series. Yeah, I didn't feel lost in this, but I felt like, there's something that I'm kind of missing, you know? And I think that, a lot of these collections that I'll read for this show in particular, I don't feel lost. You know, something like Sandman, it's like, it doesn't have anything to do with the Sandman that came before, you know? So you really can start fresh. I think it's interesting because this character he was part of the Justice Society, but he's not what we would consider a good guy. He's not a hero, right? I mean, I think that's a fair assessment, Jeff.
Yeah, interestingly, they had taken him to a point where he was basically DC's version of the Submariner. He was almost like an anti-hero who was leaning toward hero, I guess, right up until what happened in the events before this.
Right.
Which apparently killed 200,000 people or 2 million people or something.
But like a million of them had it coming. So
we all have rough days. I mean,
what can you do?
Yeah.
So
you just hold it against him forever.
Yeah. So that was the other interesting thing about this. To Eric's point, it did have a very, almost like a Homeric, like, so it's like the hero's journey. I love an Odyssey story. Yeah. It was definitely an Odyssey story, but in this case, it was distinctly the villain's journey because you knew it was doomed to failure when you start. They telegraphed that really early on with his first failed attempt to bring to set it up. The whole thing is about trying to bring his dead wife, Isis, back to life.
Yeah.
And that's just not the way the world works. Even superhero world sometimes aren't supposed to work that way.
I think somebody should have just given him a dog-eared copy of Pet Sematary and just been like, get like 30 pages in and you're going to see it's not a great idea. Like,
sometimes dead really is better. I mean, and we learned this a lot, by the way, in comic books, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a great point. Yeah. Go ahead.
So the whole series is totally motivated by his selfishness. I mean, he really does nothing that isn't self-serving in the book. So it's a very bizarre, I give Peter Tomasi credit that even with that, I did feel some sympathy for him. I understood where he was coming from. He sort of narrates it in various parts through captions and some of that's very well written. The art's very good. You know, I know it sounds like we're bagging on the thing, but I did enjoy the journey. It's just, there's a point you get to the end of it. It's like, oh, okay. It was just a journey that was almost sort of unnecessary.
Yeah. I mean, I think for me, you know, it's a placement in the DC universe. I feel like it was a bit of a couple of missed opportunities. There's like one gag that happens like twice. One, it's like a big reveal, you know, the Justice League and I guess and the Justice Society are both looking. The first time you see just the Justice League, and then the next time it's Justice League and the Justice Society. And it's like, this is a cool splash page, but it actually doesn't impact the story. It's not like we're looking for, I'm like, this is about to get real. He's going to take on all of that. No, they're just looking for him, you know? And I don't know. I mean, I wonder if that's what we were talking about in the beginning, Jeff, that it's like, oh yeah, yeah. That continues. If you continue reading issue 7 and beyond, they continue looking for him. Eventually they catch up with him. You know, I mean, I don't know. It's not in these 6 issues. And I was kind of excited. I was like, you know, like the veterinarian that basically is explaining, like, no, he saved us. Like that scene with Superman and Batman. I'm like, oh, this is cool. But I was like, oh man, they're in it. And then they don't do anything with them. I don't know.
Yeah.
It was a weird
Let me ask Eric first. What do you think about that point?
By the way, I'm bringing up here for our Telegraph audience out there. There's one page here that dealt with, I suppose, what you were just talking about, Jeff, right? The Infinite Crisis, where in essence, this is where in a time of crisis, we monitor everything. And they're talking about the special teams couldn't stop. Was it Spectre or whoever it was? Like, so it was, it would occasionally like name check these like big storylines without the age, you know, the good old days of like you would name check an issue and you would actually have the little asterisk with the issue number. Didn't do that. But to your point, Christian, yeah, I found like more than once it felt like there was a cat they were letting a little out of the bag only to push its head right back down. Yeah. And I thought there would be so much fun to see, in essence, the entire Justice League looking for this guy. Oh, yeah, this is one of I don't know if you want to frame it up.
You can
talk
about it. Just describe it for our audio audience. But I thought this was a – go ahead.
Yeah, one of the things I really enjoy about the Black Adam movie, which is very present in this series as well, and also, by the way, present in the TV show The Boys, it's the idea of like what kind of carnage superheroes would do on a regular basis. Like just in their, you know, thwarting a villain and throwing him around and like, where does that person land and what kind of shape are they in when they land? Well, at this point, Black Adam is trying to get some information from one of the guys sent to kill him. And he basically flies with him up and it goes from, was it the atmosphere to the stratosphere to the mesosphere. And you see this guy's body turn to dust as he's flying higher and higher. In the thermosphere,
yeah,
doesn't
make it up to the thermosphere. Yeah,
yeah, and I found like that was something in the movie they actually played it for laughs in a way that was surprisingly funny and like kind of edgy in a way that DC can be has the DC movies have been dark, but they haven't necessarily been edgy. But the idea of getting humor out of that in Black Adam the movie without spoiling anything for you, Jeff, like I thought they did that reasonably well, and. That's the stuff in the comic that I found myself kind of enjoying, like the shock and awe of it. Like there's a part where he's flying through and he slices guys in half just with his arms.
It's interesting because, you know, a lot of like morally ambiguous characters that I've read a lot of are Wolverine and the Punisher immediately come to mind.
Sure.
They can only do so much. Usually your morally ambiguous characters don't have this level of power. You know, where they can kind of do anything. You know, I mean, he's right up there with Superman in terms of what he can do. So I find it to be an interesting exploration. And yeah, because it's a more modern comic, we see some of that. What are some of your thoughts on this part of the conversation, Jeff?
Yeah, as far as being dark goes, I believe this series featured cannibalism. So it gets pretty dark at pretty early on.
So funny, I forgot the cannibalism until you mentioned it.
And it was cannibalism. It was almost like you got the sense it was like his take home, like it was his like lunchable.
Right,
like he was
right,
walking around with this guy's body parts in a satchel.
Yeah, very bizarre. I will say to that point, like this book did have one of the best first pages I've read. I love that. Pretty badass where he's asking his, you don't really know exactly what's going on, who's being punched. You kind of get figured out pretty quickly and you don't know why. You think he's been taken hostage.
Oh, yeah.
Something's happening.
He's asking, one of his disciples basically to punch him and disfigure him.
They spent 2 days punching him nonstop, switching out guys to make his face unrecognizable to the authorities. Pretty cool. I kind of like that. The cannibalism I could have skipped maybe, but that was actually cool. But actually, as it turns out, I had read the follow-up to this. So they pick up with the Faust storyline in an issue of Justice, a couple issues of Justice Society. And so there's never a payoff though to the Black Adam versus the Justice League, Justice Society combined. Like they just drop that, you know?
And I mean, that is just like, I don't know. I mean, oddly enough, I don't see those characters in comic books very often. Any of them, I'm like, oh, I know them from the movies. So I'm like, oh, this could be really cool. And
in the cartoons, actually, that's where I feel like I've spent more time with them.
Yes,
in the cartoons.
I mean, I spent a lot of time with them as a youth in the Super Friends, but
Wendy and Marvin iteration being the finest, of course.
A little bit more Wonder Twins.
Of course.
Yeah.
But, no one likes Wendy and Marvin, Christian. No one, not even their parents like Wendy and Marvin.
Wasn't there a dog too?
Super Mutt. Yeah.
Super Mutt. Yeah.
Yeah.
But
no,
it's not even Crypto.
Powers.
It's not even Crypto. It's Super Mutt. Yeah. Like Crypto can carry a movie. I saw that League of Super Pets movie with my kids. It was all right. You know? Anyway. Let's talk a little bit more about some of the good. I agree with what you said, Jeff. Artistically, I think there's some great stuff to look at. you know, and you know, even though the story didn't pay it off, I did really like that page with the Justice Society and the Justice League. You know, I'm like, oh, that's so cool. And then you're just like, hey, what happened to that cool thing I just read like four pages ago? Oh yeah, okay, yeah. Nothing. Yeah.
So but, Doug Monke, the artist on this book, was an established talent by this point. He had done a run on Justice League. He had done a run on Superman. He's really good at drawing big, muscular guys. Mm-hmm. And surprisingly, really beautiful women. There's a panel he drew of Wonder Woman in an issue that is just frozen in my mind, just a single close-up of her face. It's one of the best Wonder Woman illustrations I've ever seen. So he's a great artist, and he has a couple of the chocolate egg cream scene. The rendering of Black Adam in that scene is just really well done. His face, the first time he changes earlier in the book, any close-up in particular is really well. He just looks like a really distinct character. He doesn't look like Superman in a black costume, Captain Marvel in a black costume. He just has a really distinct look. So I did think the art was exceptional in the book.
Yeah, I was wondering if he was, picking this up. I'm like, is he going to look like Captain Marvel / Shazam just in a, you know, in a darker suit? You know,
right.
It seems he doesn't look like The Rock, but that's okay.
You know.
No one looks like The Rock. I don't, you know,
that's a great point. No one looks like The Rock.
But yeah, Jeff, you're also bringing up how he draws women. I don't know if you want this panel or not, Christian. But
is this one of the ones that you sent me, or is this
no? I didn't send this one because
that's all right.
I don't want to send you smut.
Let's go. Let's, yeah,
we don't
bring forth the smut.
All right, bring forth the smut. Here you go, kids.
I can't. Oh yeah, I know. That's
that's ISIS just getting regenerated. Basically.
Yeah, ISIS getting regenerated. Yeah, that's a very like Image Comics style.
Oh my god, yeah.
Yeah.
And my wife was like over my shoulder, like I was reading this, and she walked by, and she's like, "What are you looking at?"
Yeah.
And like,
it's just one panel.
I swear, honey, the rest of this is utter violence.
Because you had it tucked into the newest issue of Hustler magazine. That's why she was.
It's because she woke up with me with this page open, cuddling it, and that might have been the problem.
Yeah,
that might have been it. Yeah.
But Eric, if you can find it real quick, there's the page with the veterinarian, the woman.
Yeah.
Well, she's explaining to Black Adam why she actually, even though he was unconscious for 2 hours, why she went ahead and patched him up.
Yeah,
it's a beautifully drawn face, and it doesn't need to be that well drawn because it's a pedestrian scene. But he does a really good job portraying that.
I will find it. I also like.
This isn't so much.
Too.
While you find it, it's not so much about the artwork itself, but that in particular, you know. That's a very matter of fact explanation that she gives there. All right. Well, now that Eric has it, we'll show. Yeah. I mean, that I agree with you. You know, when I read comics as a kid, there was never a panel of just some, you know, of an angry person just drawn that well. You know, nobody was rendered that well. And part of it was the printing process. But I agree with you on that, Jeff. Yeah.
And this is one of the better scenes, I think, in the book. The only thing that kind of ruined it for me was Black Adam leaves them, and then the people who are sent to kill Black Adam show up, and they're basically assaulting and threatening to kill the veterinarians. He comes back and rescues them, but he does it. He's snide about it. He says, "You're welcome." Well, dude, they're only in trouble because you were there in the first place. I mean, I know you're kind of like a villain, but that was unnecessary. You didn't have to run it in. Like.
Yeah, it's to prove a point. I did like the point that the veterinarian made, though. The representation, the face that went with it, kind of talking about here's what would happen, you know, if I tried to not revive you. You know, I like my town. Yeah. I don't want everybody to die in it. Another moment that I liked was when he just kind of explains, this is very late in it, rocking a solid Seattle Mariners hat. And he says, if it gives you and your associates any comfort in the netherworld, I will be deprived of my sensory organs and forced to eat my own excrement for all eternity. My soul and shadow will be burned in a cauldron of hellfire, and I will be forced to swim in the blood of my victims. Yeah, well, Judgment Day is a bitch. Every day.
That's how I felt the first time I tried kombucha. Very similar effect on me. If I could go back to the vet scene for one sec.
Yeah, sure.
One almost like throwaway moment is then the Justice League shows up to basically interview them. And yeah. I don't know if you guys noticed, there's some dude who's like half his body is in the ceiling.
Yes.
And it's like one of those like little kind of throwaway images. I'll just hold it up real quick for those who are watching this on their homes. Like right there, it's just in the background. They don't even make a big thing of it. It's just this yeah. dude.
This is very matter of fact. I did like that detail. Yeah.
Yeah. And I found like, yeah, that moment with the veterinarian, you're right. It was like a really good subplot that was short, but to the point and actually had an impact. And right. That idea of like, if you freak out here, you're going to kill this whole town. And it was a great reminder too. Like her logic was really unique. And if anything, I thought that could have been a whole issue right there.
Yeah. It's absolutely.
Just that storyline of and like, what do you do look, when someone like this shows up?
We've had variations on that in not just superhero media. The you know, small town doctor who unfortunately lingered for a few extra minutes and then somebody shows up and, you know, and there's a lot of different ways that could have gone. But I mean, the fact that we all noticed it and we're all talking about it shows that I think it is really well done. You know, it is kind of interesting in a lot of ways, you know, that, I don't even know that it's a trope, but it is something that happens with some regularity that I thought that they were able to put an interesting and unique spin on it. You know, while we're talking about small towns, because it was brought up, I need to very selfishly focus on this diner scene that we have, because although it doesn't look like it, it is set in Warwick, New York. Now, myself, I am from the village of Greenwood Lake, New York, which resides within the town of Warwick, New York. So completely random.
Nice.
That I'm reading this. I'm like, I gotta let me put the glasses on because I must not have read that. Oh my gosh, that's my town, you know.
Wow.
So it was just such a random moment, and I know it's not really relevant to the greater appreciation of it, but I was just like, the writer, the editor. So like, who knows that town? Nobody knows that town.
This was still at a time when DC was still in New York City. So maybe someone was from the outskirts of the city. Who knows? But it's interesting.
Yeah. When my wife wrote the episode of Mad Men that she wrote, she tried to put Greenwood Lake in the script and, you know, it just, somebody was dealing in real estate and it didn't make it to the screen. So this is one of those moments, although they do go, to my town in one of the later seasons of The Sopranos.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, you know, it happens, it shows up, but it's interesting though, because so the character he's in that diner with, that's a member of the Justice Society, correct? That's
Adam Smasher.
That's Adam Smasher, who we see in the movie. And I kind of really liked that dynamic because these two didn't fight. They both know what could have happened. And that's what made me think of that scene is the way we were talking about the veterinarian scene. This is a lot of like, we know the level of carnage and devastation that could be caused. Should we really do that?
Yeah.
Is that worth it right now? And the answer is no, it wasn't for this point, you know? So I think that, you know, there's a lot of stuff in here that could have felt familiar. And we didn't get that. So there were some surprises, you know, and, you know, just random things like, you know, he goes through that sunken Chinese submarine, you know, and he's like, oh, boy, there's all these dead people here. Oh, but look how happy the fish are. Uh-oh. Boy, Aquaman's going to be pissed that that a nuke went off under the water, you know. And I was like, yeah, Aquaman is going to be pissed, you know. I think he'll probably be able to figure out it was you, but in any case, you know, there's little touches like that, that I'm like, I don't know. This didn't feel like anything I'd read before, you know, and I haven't read a lot of DC. I'm always very upfront about that, but that's a big reason why we have this show. So for the most part, I enjoyed it, but I really felt like, oh man, just some kind of payoff. I don't know if he had revived Isis at the end and then that set off onto whatever the next adventure was, or if he was actually unsuccessful, but instead it's like, fooled you, you know?
Yeah.
And I was like, okay.
Yeah. So, terribly disappointing indeed.
Yeah.
I felt for that reason.
And it didn't really plant that twist either. Like I think that if you had a little bit earlier, then that would have felt like earned. And it wasn't earned. It was random. And and I guess in some ways, okay, now I did definitely want to like read the next issue and be like, okay, does he ever get Isis back now that she's seemingly back in our world? But you know, like it did feel a little Scooby-Doo-ish in some ways.
Yeah.
You know, like, thank God you can't tell a male skeleton from a female skeleton.
It's true. Black Adam would have gotten away with it if it weren't for those meddling kids. You know,
and it was really the old man at the amusement park who really was behind it and this as well.
If only. But I don't know. What were some of the big takeaways from this 6-issue experience for you, Eric? Just sort of, you know, the pros and cons. We've touched on individual things, but are you motivated to pursue subsequent stories?
You know, I would be. I actually definitely took a look to see, okay, New Age number 7, you know, see if Comixology has it cheap or, you know, whatever, you know, Marvel, DC deals they got floating around. So I don't know if I was going to spend money, but at least I'd spend a discounted amount of money on it or bum it off of you if you have it, Jeff. you know, I enjoyed the.
It'd be interesting that you would drive all the way to Palm Springs just to borrow
Just to save $5 in a comic.
Where are you going
Massive win. Gatsby damned. You know, I found. I enjoyed that it was a villain's journey, as you put it before, Jeff. Like, I really liked that. I think I did find myself weirdly rooting for this guy. Now, if I had read the issues before of him, I don't know, destroying several hundred thousand innocent lives, maybe he wouldn't have liked him as much, you know? But instead, I'm bringing with it not that backstory. I'm bringing with it a little bit of the movie, of course. It's kind of hard to keep that completely out of the mind. But I did find myself weirdly rooting for him, wanting him to get back with his lost love. If nothing else, maybe to bring peace, not just to him, but to the world around him that he's like, he's kind of not necessarily destroying, but at least leaving a pretty decent trail of damage. I think the storytelling versus Marvel, it did feel like it almost had a little bit of ADHD at times. Like it would start to go down another road and then quickly come back in ways that I found kind of frustrating as someone who didn't read the issues before this. But I did think like, okay, this was like, it actually stuck with a certain tone, like throughout pretty much the whole run. It didn't try to sugarcoat it. It didn't try to soften the blow. This is a violent sociopathic character who, as you put it before, Christian, very selfish. Like it's his choices are not about a greater good. And he will sacrifice his followers. He will sacrifice friends. You know, even like when he goes against Hawkman, like that was a buddy of his. And he, one of my favorite lines was the on a wing and a prayer when he dropped the Hawkman from, you know, I don't know if it was the stratosphere, the megasphere, but in essence, like he was not above killing Hawkman if need be for his own gain. And so I was like, okay, that's pretty dark. That's Tony Soprano. That's like a true anti-hero who's not really a hero at all. And on that end, that's where I think it was really impressive. It went there and it stayed there and it wasn't afraid to sort of swim in those waters for multiple issues.
Yeah, no, I thought that the interaction with Hawkman, I think, is probably the thing that felt the most like the movie, actually. Mm-hmm. Because that is a great sequence in the movie. And yes, this was for our visual audience. You can see what Eric is speaking about, A Wing and a Prayer. And then you also liked the moment that follows this where he asked to borrow a cell phone. he's all beaten up. You know, talking a little bit about the ADHD of it, there's this storyline that runs throughout that there's this group that has been tasked with killing someone who's theoretically unkillable. And then it's like there's this reveal that it's tied to the president, you know, and it's like, OK, the president looks like Casey Kasem. I'm just going to move on from that. I don't know who this president is, you know, but I didn't. I don't know. I felt like it was another one of those opportunities that I was just like, okay, am I supposed to be surprised? Because I feel like U.S. presidents in fiction in general are not. And you know what? In the real world, too, not above putting together an elite team to, you know, take out somebody that they think needs to be taken out. I mean, you know, so this is like a SEAL Team 6 that has some, you know, some invented weaponry and, you know, that actually damaged him. I mean, the moment where he thinks to himself, like, if that had hit me in the head, I actually would have died. You know, what do you think about this part of it, Jeff?
Yeah, I had the same thought. It was sort of left dangling. Like, yeah, they allude to the president. They kind of allude to the, maybe it's a UN team. Then there's like some third party who's like kind of behind it, but unofficially. And there's a, they never don't really pay off who that guy is. Like, am I supposed to recognize this guy? Because I've been reading DC comics for, you know, 50, you know, almost 40 years. I don't recognize him at all. It's just things like that left dangling. There's a one page scene of Talia al Ghul that goes nowhere. It's just, you know, just basically to say, hey, somebody used a Lazarus pit, which the whole Lazarus pit thing is a Ra's al Ghul Batman concept where Ra's al Ghul will be, you know, close to death. He goes into one of these pits. It revives him. There are these various pits located throughout the globe, and only he knows the location.
Yeah, I think we talked about that actually when Neil Adams passed away. We did an issue of the first appearance of Ra's al Ghul actually.
Yeah,
and see, look at that. That's something that I actually remember from the DC comic that I read.
Yeah, but again, if you're just reading this cold, they don't explain it. The Hawkman. See, I'm glad Eric mentioned it. It's a great scene. Also, very powerfully drawn. Like it looks like two really powerful guys just going at it, which is pretty awesome. But that's a great example of Black Adam is narrating that scene through captions early on. But for the reader, it would have been a great opportunity to say, this is Hawkman, my former teammate on the Justice Society.
Mm-hmm.
He's also the reincarnation of the Pharaoh I served in ancient Egypt. They don't mention that at all. So these two have a lifetime of multiple lifetimes of history together, just totally left, red meat to just they didn't even throw to the wolves where they could have easily sort of bought some currency of adding some more a different level of importance to that fight that they just didn't do.
Now you're making me think that whenever we read these DC books, we should do like a Zoom call, screen share each page as we read it, and then Jeff, you'll just kind of it'll be like the old VH1 pop up video. So you'll just explain the things. It's like, yeah, here's what they didn't tell you. Because that's fascinating that Hawkman is the reincarnation of the Pharaoh that he served. I'm like, oh, that's cool. There's a lot more to that dynamic. I mean, it's not essential for the fight that happens in this story.
No, not at all.
It adds a layer to it that makes fascinating, really. Yeah. So,
And you're right. It was like a missed dramatic opportunity. As good as that scene is,
yes,
you know, and I really enjoyed that scene as mentioned. But when you're describing it, I was like, oh, geez, like there's a whole other thing.
And by the way, it's so good that is what's on the back cover.
I love how they drew him like Hawkman. They did such a great job. And when his mask is like breaking and you see he's bleeding, you very much felt the impact of their blows to against each other. Not a shame. Yeah, we need to know it is, Jeff. You should record maybe yourself as you read it and speak out loud, and then we can listen to it while we read.
It's like a director's commentary. Yeah. You only hear him speak up when it's necessary.
Right.
Believe me, in this book, it was necessary almost every panel, but that was a degree of frustration, even though I really enjoyed it. But there's just so much where it's like, oh, this is what is setting up this. And I know this because I've read the majority of the stuff leading up to it. But I can't imagine if you're coming in cold, how that it made me think, Christian, about, you know, when you were growing up reading the X-Men, having read, you know, some of the X-Men either in a random issue here and there because I wasn't a regular reader. In almost every issue, there's a shot of the mansion. There's a caption that tells you it's the Xavier School for Gifted Youngsters.
Yeah.
There's another thing that tells you who the X-Men are. There's panels that almost explain every character. Now, if you're reading a collection, that gets tedious. But for that idea of every issue might be a reader's first, which I know is not the same now that comics can't be bought at convenience stores and kids aren't reading them as much, but there was something between that and what we got, I think would have served the reader better and been a better reading experience, especially collecting it in this way with a rock cover on it.
I think, I think digital killed the comic book star, because the fact is that, oh, should I pick up issue 7 or should I read 1 through 6 that I don't have to go and try and track down? Right. I'm just going to read them, you know, on my phone perhaps, and then I'll be caught up, you know? So yeah, that whole thing from when we were kids, all of us, that every comic book, it's like, it's everybody's first issue. I talk a lot about the first X-Men that I ever read was X-Men, Uncanny X-Men 176. And Scott Summers is on his honeymoon with Madeline Pryor and he fights a squid. That doesn't seem like a good entry point for anyone. There's like one panel about an ongoing story with the Morlocks. I was like, well, I want to know more about that. I don't know what any of this was. But you didn't feel as lost because of the fact that they take the time. And yeah, you're right. We don't get that anymore, but we probably should, you know, but TV doesn't do that anymore either, because they're like, people are binging, you know, like 4 seasons of this show.
And also, we have Google. I mean, here's the thing we didn't have, right? We didn't have Google. Like, more than once as I was reading this, I found myself like, oh, I think that's Adam Smasher. And lo and behold, like, I do a quick search. Yes, it is. So I remember as a kid, right? Like, when I would, same thing, Christian, like, I'd read these comics and they would, as mentioned before, they would allude to other issues. And if I had those, sometimes I'd be like, oh, I don't know if I remember that one. And I'd actually open the box, go through and find it.
Oh, yeah.
And so it was, and also having the Marvel Encyclopedia, you know, I mean, there was something like so kind of fun about, like, you know, it's almost like studying the liner notes of an old record, you know, like you basically find all this information by investigating, and it was encouraged. And now you could still do it, just it goes so much faster. And, you know, and Stan Lee obviously loved his exposition. You know, he would throw it at us 2 scoops at a time.
Honestly, to keep it on the X-Men for a moment, when Classic X-Men started, that was the only way that I ever read those stories, because it was just, I couldn't afford to buy them and they weren't collected properly at that time. Yeah. Similarly, one of the most shows, if I'm not in on a TV show when it starts, I usually don't pick it up. The one that I ever did that with was the X-Files. I think I was like the middle of season 2. And then when that went into syndication and reruns, I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to, like, you know, actually get in on the beginning. And now it's like neither of those dilemmas. If you want to know more, you're right, Eric. You don't have to like download all these comics. You don't have to find the streaming service. No, it's Google is like, who's this guy? You know, and then you've got your answer. And, you know, but I did feel a little lost. But look, the summary is that I enjoyed this story. I would like to know more stories with Black Adam that are worth reading. But it seems like, to Jeff's point, it's a lot of like longer runs in Justice Society, right?
Yeah, they actually did. I've seen collect with a rock cover a Justice Society story called Black Rain, R-E-I-G-N, is a previous to this story. Okay. And sets up some of the things that we read here. That is a very good story. It also has Dr. Fate, Hawkman, Adam Smasher, explains that relationship that we get the payoff in the diner in this scene from that relationship there. So again, I don't know that it really functions as a standalone story, but I do feel that's a Jeff Johns written comic. So I do feel you could probably read it and get the nut of it.
Okay.
Humorously enough, if you were like almost like the quintessential Black Adam story, or the story that you would read to understand the character, is Power of Shazam, which was obviously a Captain Marvel Shazam story that was done in the mid-90s. That if DC movies were Marvel movies, would have been the premise of the DC movie Shazam, because it's basically him versus Black Adam. Black Adam's his opposite number. Like, just like all the first wave Marvel movies have the Marvel characters fighting their opposite number. You know, Iron Man fights Iron Monger. Red Skull is essentially a failed super soldier of a Nazi. Yeah. Ant-Man fights Yellow Jacket. Black Panther fights an evil Black Panther. You know, so that's sort of like the Marvel formula. DC probably would have done that if they were following that formula.
By the way, Christian, I did earlier say, "Hey Siri, who is Mr. Terrific?" And so, like, I did. Oh, in fact, as I said it, my Siri just lit up and is trying to tell me again.
I did like that he had the silk jacket, like an 80s wrestler, that said Mr. Terrific on the back. Yeah, that was one of those where I'm like, I'm just going to keep reading. But yeah.
I love that name too much to let it go.
Mr. Terrific.
I need to know more.
He's a great character, by the way. So if you ever, he's in that Justice Society stuff. So if you ever read that, it's really good. I did love that scene though. Like, it's very early in the first issue, and they're visiting, I guess, is it Balia? So it's the country that Black Adam, I guess, decimated all these people. And so it's half the Justice Society. And one says to another, let's keep it low key because these people are really afraid of people with superpowers right now.
Right.
I'm like, oh, maybe you should be wearing your costumes then.
Yeah.
You know, if you're just here on a scouting mission for the UN, like, maybe you just show up in like fatigues or something. You know, I don't know. Khaki pants and a Hawaiian shirt.
Yeah, the scene that Eric focused on earlier where he flies up to the satellite, you know, and then drags that poor bastard up there with him, you know, and he just kind of looks in the into the satellite and talks directly to them, I think it was a very cinematic moment. I'm like, oh, yeah, I can see that in, you know, some future James Gunn, you know, themed movie that Black Adam appears in. I think that movie wasn't successful by what they consider success domestically, but I mean, you've got The Rock signed on to be part of your universe, so I can't imagine that we don't see more of this character, you know.
And by the way, Gunn's just teased Mr. Terrific a couple days ago in a tweet.
I saw that. He's really focused on Lobo, by the way. I've seen James Gunn even before the DC announcement. He posted a picture of Lobo. So
is that what Momoa is doing?
Yeah, I think that's a theory, that Jason Momoa could be Lobo in addition to, of course, being Aquaman, you know? So I guess
he's the Peter Sellers of the DC universe, which, by the way, I'm completely okay with.
I think he's got it in him. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well, it'll be interesting to see. So look, I enjoyed this story. I like the character. I'm intrigued. But I think that they need to select the, you know, they should really push forth the right books, slap The Rock's face on the Essential Collection. This didn't do a good job of telling me what I should read next, you know, other than just getting issue 7 of this series. You know, there's like a Shazam collection. There's a Shazam that has a picture of Zachary Levi from the poster. So I'm like, all right, I don't know exactly what that is. So, and I think that, I don't know, maybe digitally they do a better job letting you know, what you should read next. But for the most part, I enjoyed it. I just think it missed the mark a little bit. There's a couple, I think it would have been really easy for this to be a great story. I think it's a good story. Does anybody, do either of you disagree with that assessment, or is that fairly accurate to your feelings? I'll ask you first, Jeff.
No, I agree. I was entertained for sure.
Yeah, 100%.
But definitely, as I mentioned earlier, frustrated. And, you know, even having read a lot of stories that came after this and stories that came before, they, like, there is no issue 7 of this. Like, this is it. This is a 6 issues and done.
Okay.
So it was just a miniseries. When you mentioned the 7th issue, I thought you were just joking. Like, oh, no, this is it.
No, it was kind of a joke. Yeah, but yeah, I thought that it continued.
Wait, it doesn't pick up that plot thread at all?
The ISIS plot thread is picked up in issue, I don't know, 28 or something of Justice Society.
So
you have to read a whole different series to follow that. And there might be some other like weekly DC thing did called Countdown or something. I can't remember. But
this is more confusing than all the Secret Wars 2 crossovers.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Comics are soap operas, but it gets really confusing when you're crossing in and out of different titles. You're creating titles out of whole cloth just to do this story, which, as we mentioned, usually, is almost invalidated by the 6th issue.
Usually, you're following the narrative of General Hospital doesn't revolve around also making sure you checked out these 10 episodes of Ryan's Hope and this 2-hour special of Days of Our Lives. And if
all
I could
which,
work...
all of which I did though, and
no, it, I know, it, yeah,
it's in my knowledge of General Hospital in a way,
yeah, no, I know you did a PhD on true. Guiding light, so
that would be a crossover because that was a different network, Christian.
Yeah, hey, it does happen sometimes, you know.
But, although I do feel after hearing Jeff talk about this, I feel like Jeff was playing chess and you and I were playing Go Fish, in terms of our knowledge of this, like,
yeah, 100%.
I was my sympathies were with you both when as I was reading, because I thought, oh my God, if I'm lost in yeah. places or feel a little like, but who is this again? And what that, refreshing my memory, I can only imagine.
Sometimes it works because you don't know you're lost. I think Eric and I both knew we were lost.
Yeah.
My wife enjoyed all of the Harry Potter movies, but never read a page of any of the books because they're like 700 pages. And she would have friends who would be like, oh, but did you not understand this or that was missing from them? She's like, no, I didn't read the book. I didn't know that, you know,
yeah.
It's like, sometimes, you know, you don't actually need to know more. This is one where it would have helped. And it's what we're talking about. The little asides, you know, the little asterisk from the editor. That's like, oh, by the way, you know, if you really want to know about this, read this, or maybe he's reincarnated from the Pharaoh, well, you know, little things, you know, like that. What were you going to say?
Your point, I mean, and by the way, this, one of my wife Lauren's biggest pet peeves is when they put the movie on the cover. This
oh, yeah.
is her feeling for books. I she hasn't read many graphic novels, but I as much as we love Dwayne Johnson in this household, it's kind of like, oh, come on. But I get it. More people are going to read it. They should do it. It's smart. But I think, like, also they missed an opportunity. And here, in terms of alluding to, like, giving us a little bit of backstory, like, usually, like, I found when it was collections of comics, they'll oftentimes kind of give you a little bit of context,
yeah,
you know, and give you maybe a small on-ramp, or at least tell you what issues this connects. This one, I found that information was actually a little hard to come across because it, even, like, looking online after I read this, I was kind of like, okay, so where does this link? And that information wasn't readily available, which, again, feels like a missed opportunity.
Yeah, yeah. And to Jeff's earliest point at the beginning of our conversation, that this might not be the definitive work, the definitive Black Adam story, I couldn't find one. What you referenced, Black Rain, I saw that in there, and I'm like, oh, but it's a Justice Society story. Let me find something that's him. So, yeah, I think that, I don't know, it should be as simple as, you know, on DC's website, you know, put this out, you know, link to it on HBO Max when the movie ends up over there, and just let people know where they can read more, make it clear. I don't know. But, you know, I'm interested to see some more of this character. I'd like to see him interact with the DC Universe proper. And, you know, after seeing the movie, you know, the idea of watching him with the Justice Society is something that I think I would be open to in the future. Speaking of the future, before we wrap things up here, we want to let everybody know about next month, which is going to be a very unique installment of the Geekscape Book Club. We will be focused on a Black Panther storyline called Sturm und Drang. It is from the year 2000. The year 2000. I thought about not doing it, and I did it anyway. And that's what that pause was. I'm like, yep, I'm doing it. It's from the year 2000. And it's a story about Atlantis invading Wakanda. So anyone who saw Wakanda Forever thought, like, well, that might be a good one to read. So we're going to read that. And if you're in the Los Angeles area, attending Los Angeles Comic-Con, you can see us live. Do this conversation as a panel, or you can just, you know, wait for the audio to show up after the fact. But December 3rd, 2:30 to 3:30, and I believe it is room 406. You can, of course, just contact myself on social media at Christian DMZ, assuming Twitter is still around then, but it is also my Instagram, and you'll be able to see us as well. And we'll have a few different friends with us talking about that story and how it relates to the film. And, you know, we might also talk about some other Black Panther storylines. There was like a 25 part Black Panther story that I remember from Marvel Comics Presents. And I mean, that was a weekly comic, and they were broken up into 10 10-page stories. That's like where we got the Wolverine Weapon X explanation was Marvel Comics Presents. But boy, a 25-part Black Panther story that dealt with apartheid, it's really well written, but it may have been lost on 12-year-old me. but that's where you'll find us in the future. And I know Eric will be there, and we've got some other friends who've been on before who will be with us. But in the meantime, we're going to close the book on this storyline. And speaking of books, oh, I banged my microphone. It was like such a
totally
professional segue and then just bad tech. So I'm a low rent. But speaking of books, The Last Battle of the Revolution, now available by our guest, Jeff Winstead. And you mentioned that there's some good things happening with the alternate in 2023, correct?
Yeah, early in the year, Antarctic Press is printing at least those first six issues of the alternate in an anthology called Exciting Comics. I just saw the cover for the third issue, which is by me. So I'm really excited about it. So I'll be sometime in the first of the year. Okay. We'll see.
Yeah, well, although I've read it already, that could be a good entry for the book club.
Especially if we critique it like in really nasty ways while here.
Take a look at issue 4, panel 6.
I thought issue number 7 lacks depth.
That's always the danger.
Mary Warner?
Worst metal man ever. Jeff, obviously, if people do want to find you on social media, how do they do that?
Just add Jeff Winstead and all the stuff.
All the stuff. And Eric Connor, where do people find you?
At Count Eric Connor, not on quite all the stuff, but where the stuff matters, Instagram and the skeleton that is Twitter. You can get me there. I also hang around Facebook, Eric Adam Connor. You can find me there as well.
By the next time we do this show, we might be like, and you can find me on Hive and Mastodon. And I don't even know what else, you know, but I might just ride or die Instagram and be like, that's enough, you know.
Or dust off our MySpaces. I mean, they're just sitting there, right? I mean,
don't know my login to my MySpace, and it's an email address for a domain I don't own anymore. So I actually can't get into my MySpace.
Christian, I can't do any social media called Mastodon if your former boss used that reference very often on his show.
I don't even remember. He's talking about Dennis Miller, but I don't remember.
It was about Mastodon heating themselves over Mastodon turds.
Oh yeah, okay, I do remember that. Yeah. Well, that's the platform I'll start. Mastodon turds. But I can be found at Christian DMZ. If you want any more information, maybe you're half listening to this and you're like, wait a minute, you think 2 weeks from now, I am going to be at LA Comic Con. How do I get to that panel? Just send me a message. I will be more than happy to help remind you when you can see us. And I'm looking forward to that. That should be fun. There's actually a lot of great Geekscape panels. Ours may be at the same time as the LeVar Burton panel. And I'm not going to lie, I'm very nervous about that.
Never heard of him. Irrelevant actor.
I would rather see Jordy LaForge than see me. But I've signed up to host this panel, and I'll be there. In any case, thank you to everyone. Thank you to Eric Connor, Jeff Winstead. And we look forward to seeing you next time on the Geekscape Book Club. But until then, keep reading. We'll talk to you next month.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.